It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Hey, 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 good morning, and welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, August 3rd, gorgeous weekend. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by IB Cool Luxury Athleisure Apparel for Men and Women, featuring the exclusive IceFill cooling technology along with UPF 50 Plus sun protection. Visit IBKOL.com to learn more. And I want to give a shout out to the Boathouse at Canoe Place Inn in Hampton Bays, where I am hosting the show this morning. Just a spectacular place if you're out here this way. Check it out near the Shinnecock Canal. Wow, lots to talk about in the world of golf. Let's start with Happy Gilmore 2. How many of you have seen Happy Gilmore 2? Or better yet, how many of you have not seen Happy Gilmore 2? Adam Sandler and his plethora of stars racked up 46.7 million views. 46.7 million on Netflix in, I think it was just the first 3 days of the film's release. It became the biggest U.S. opening weekend in Netflix history. And was it funny? Of course it was funny. And yes, it was ridiculous. But that's Adam Sandler. And so I'm not going to review the quality of the writing or the lines. But I will say what the most impressive part of the film to me is just the vast number of celebrities that they got to appear in this movie. And I loved watching it, and I would probably watch it again, as ridiculous as it is. But from the golf genre, you had Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka, Colin Morikawa, Jordan Spieth, Xander Schauffele, Jack Nicklaus, Justin Thomas, Tony Finau, Will Zalatoris, Bubba Watson, Ricky Fowler, Keegan Bradley, Lee Trevino, Freddie Couples, Jim Furyk. John Daly plays a huge role in it. Nelly Korda, Nancy Lopez, even Brooks Koepka's wife makes a brief cameo. Just so many golfers. How much fun to see them. And then you had the celebrity actors in the film. Bad Bunny, who plays Adam Sandler's caddy. He was hysterical. He's a very good actor. Travis Kelce plays the waiter. Very good. Very funny. Even his dad, Travis Kelce's dad, made a brief cameo. You had WNBA star Kelce Plum. You had a professional wrestler, Maxwell Jacob Friedman. You had the guy who directed the original Happy Gilmore, Dennis Dugan, in it. You had Baba Majanovic. You had Steve Buscemi, Eminem, Guy Fieri from the Food Network, John Lovitz, broadcaster Stephen A. Smith, Chris Berman, Vern Lundquist, Jim Gray, Dan Patrick. Just, I'm sure I'm missing a ton of people, but even the host of Jeopardy, Ken Jennings. But whether you like that kind of ridiculous humor or not, I really think it puts the golf front and center into homes and in front of viewers who, may not play the game at all. So it was definitely great for golf, and really enjoyed it. I could watch it again because you just discover, like, there's more people in it that you recognize, right? Even his family. He used his entire family in the film. His real-life wife and his two daughters. Even his mother was in it. And actors from the first movie. Christopher McDonald, Julie Bowen, Ben Stiller, Kevin Nealon. Anyway, really fun if you have a chance to watch it. All right, well, the fifth and final major championship on the women's calendar, the AIG Women's Open, is taking place at Royal Porthcawl in Wales. And the final round is already underway. It's a tight leaderboard, 17 players within six shots of the lead, and Japan's Mayu Yamashita, she takes a one-shot lead into the final round. She actually turned 24 years old yesterday. It was her birthday. She shot a plus 274. She's 9 under for the championship. And she will start one shot ahead of A. Lim Kim from the Republic of Korea and 2 shots ahead of American Andrea Lee. She actually had a 3-shot lead heading into the third round. But then A. Lim Kim shot a bogey-free 67. Andrea Lee shot a 67 as well. So those two played lights out. Charlie Hall, she carded a 66, seven birdies in like 13 holes. She is 6 under overall, and she's among three others, only three shots back. I just love watching Charlie Hall. She's fun to root for. She has a ton of fans out there, huge galleries following her all week in Wales. She's a great athlete, and I really enjoy her personality. Lottie Woad, the FSU standout from England. She won the Irish Women's Open as an amateur. She turned pro, and then she won the first tournament she played in as a pro, the Women's Scottish Open. So Lottie shot a 1-under 71 yesterday. She is 3-under for the championship. She's in a tie for 11th. She's 8 shots back. She'll get started. Actually, it's at 7:55 this morning, our time. And Nelly Korda shot a plus 274 yesterday. She is even for the championship. She has already started her final round. Last I looked, she was plus 1 through 2 holes. Defending champion Lydia Ko shot a 272 yesterday. She started the round at even par. Not a good start for Lydia, though. This morning, she double bogeyed the first hole. And Minji Lee, she will start the round at 2-under. So there are some scores for you. The amateurs are in this as well, competing for the Smythe Salver Honors. And Paula Martin San Pedro had a 3-shot lead heading into the final round in the amateur competition. Interesting fact, the guy who invented the Stapleford scoring system, Dr. Frank Stapleford, he was a member of Royal Porthcawl, where the women are playing the Women's Open in Wales. All right, we're going to connect in a little bit with TV golf commentator extraordinaire Grant Boone, and we'll talk more about the Women's Open, Lottie Woad, and Nelly Korda, and issues in women's golf. We also have the PGA Tour happening in Greensboro for the final tournament of the regular season, the Wyndham Championship. And after today's round, the top 70 players in the FedEx Cup standings will qualify for next week's FedEx St. Jude Championship. The St. Jude Championship is the first of three events in the FedEx Cup playoffs. And at the Wyndham Championship, Cameron Young, who grew up playing golf at Sleepy Hollow in the Met section, he may indeed get his very first PGA Tour title if he can hold on to his 5-shot lead heading into today's final round. He has rounds of 7-under-63, 8-under-62, 5-under-65, just playing lights out. He's 20-under for the tournament overall, and he has that 5-shot lead over Nico Echeverria. So yesterday's 5-under-65 included 4 straight birdies for Cameron Young on the front, holes 3, 4, 5, and 6. Then he bogeyed on 14, but then he birdied on 15 and 17. So he is looking for his first PGA Tour victory in his 94th start, with 5 of his 7 runner-up finishes coming during the 2021-2022 season. So 7 runner-up finishes is actually the most on tour without a win since like 1983. I am pulling for Cameron Young. It's so difficult to win on the PGA Tour. And yeah, you can lose the 5-shot lead. And I'm just hoping Cameron can keep it together. Hopefully he has nerves of steel and he'll continue to play lights out so he can close out his first win this afternoon. That would be awesome for Cameron Young. And hats off to Padraig Harrington, who won another major title last Sunday's Senior British Open. He carded a 367 in the final round. He won by 3 shots over Tomas Bjorn and Justin Thomas. And in winning the Senior British Open and an Open title, he's actually won 2 Open Championships. Padraig became the 5th player with both a Senior British Open and a British Open title. He's just been incredible. He was so focused on his game last Sunday that he did not see Rory McIlroy walking around, Padraig said afterwards. Rory's building a home in London and was at Sunningdale for the final round, but Padraig didn't see him. Well, you know, Padraig was out there winning a tournament. So just a great season for Padraig, winning 2 senior major titles. He won the U.S. Senior Open last month at the Broadmoor, and then last Sunday's Senior Open Championship at Sunningdale. And as you know, if you've read my book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf, Padraig is one of 12 legends in the book. And he shares a ton of great stories and insight into his mindset, both on and off the course. And it looks like he's just getting better and stronger with age, for sure, which is great to see. All right, well, the last couple of weeks, you've heard me talk about Chris Goderup, the 26-year-old raised in Little Silver, New Jersey. He played golf at Rutgers University. He won the Scottish Open several weeks ago, holding off Rory McIlroy, of all people, to win his second PGA Tour title. And then 1 week later, he finished in solo third place in the Open Championship at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland. And that two-week stretch pushed him up in the FedEx Cup standings by 55 spots. And then he came back from the UK and he played the TPC Twin Cities PGA Tour event last week. He finished tied for 10th. But his results have just been outstanding. And, you know, this morning I'm going to be very excited to talk to Chris's coach since he was 14 years old, Jason Birnbaum, who is the director of instruction at Manhattan Woods in West Nyack, New York. Jason's a Golf Magazine Top 100 teacher, a Golf Digest Best in State teacher in New York. And I can't wait to hear what Jason has to say about golf's new star, Chris Goderup. So Jason will join us after the 7:40 break. Quickly, the U.S. Women's Amateur Championship starts tomorrow through Sunday at gorgeous Bandon Dunes Golf Resort on the Bandon Dunes course. Love that golf course. It's going to play at about 6,310 yards to a par 72. Obviously open to female amateur players who have a handicap index not exceeding 2.4, and they had qualifying for this championship between June 17th and July 14th. At 23 sites across the U.S. Last year's winner was Ryan Malixi over Asterisk Tally, 3-2. And you'll be able to watch the coverage of the U.S. Women's Amateur all week on the Golf Channel, which is spectacular. And shout out to Bryson DeChambeau, who has become the chairman of the President's Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition. I remember this program when I was in school, and every year we would strive to earn that badge by, you know, competing and doing various physical tests. I think it's important for kids and everyone to exercise daily and to be educated on the importance of good nutrition. So I'm glad this program is back, and I think Bryson's the perfect person to chair it. Good for him. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll talk about the AIG Women's Open Championship with TV golf commentator extraordinaire Grant Boone. But first, let me tell you that IB Cole Luxury Athleisure Wear for both men and women offers the highest performance-driven apparel to look and feel your best on and off the course. IB Cole offers multifunctional, intelligent moisture sensor fabrics featuring the exclusive Icefill technology that cools your skin up to 5 degrees so you can stay cool, comfortable, and odor-free on hot and humid days. Use promo code AN20 for 20% off regularly priced items at www.ibkol.com.
It's Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Hey, welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. And joining me now is sports broadcaster extraordinaire Grant Boone. Grant works for NBC, CBS, ESPN. He's a play-by-play host for LPGA tournaments on the Golf Channel. What a pleasure to welcome back Grant Boone. Good morning, Grant.
Annie, the pleasure is all mine. How are you this morning?
I'm good. And I adore, first off, I have to say this, how committed you are to women's golf. It is truly outstanding, my friend.
Well, this is what I do. It's what I love. It's, the job itself is the best in the world. I mean, it's, you know, I grew up wanting to be a sportscaster and I get the chance to do it. And then to be, you know, part of a tour, this traveling circus that goes all over the world and Wales this week. And, it's a real joy. It's less of a job than a joy.
I'd love to ask you how you've seen it, 'cause you've been doing this for a long time. How has the women's game in your eyes progressed through the years? What do you notice the most?
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing you notice are all the different flags to the left of people's names. When I got out on the LPGA Tour for the first time, it was the year 2000, and my very first tournament was in March, and Kari Webb beat Annika Sorenstam in a playoff, and it was electric. They were the two best players in the world, and it was really at that time when we were about a decade into the European invasion. It's not that there were no players from outside the U.S. before 1990-ish. Laura Davies won the U.S. Open in 1987, not far away from you in Plainfield, New Jersey. And that really ushered in the European wave. There had been a couple of players, the great Sally Little from South Africa, and Chaco Higuchi had come from Japan and won. There had been a couple of other players, Ayako Okamoto in the 80s. But really, that brought the European wave in. And Kari Webb came over. She followed in the footsteps of the great Jan Stevenson, who was a major champion. So that was 2000. Well, then, Sayre Park, 1998, you know, right before I got out there, she had that breakout year as a 20-year-old. She won a couple of majors. She won five times. And all of a sudden, here comes Korea over the next 25 years. And Korea dominated the 2000 and 10s. Look at that decade, 2010 to 2020. They won as many majors as all the other countries combined. But now what you see is China, Thailand. You're seeing players from all over the globe compete. And all it's done, it really even way more so than men's golf. In men's golf, you still have largely Americans dominating. But in women's golf, so many countries have devoted resources. And the U.S., actually, under Mike Kwan of the USGA, they've now begun their own junior developmental team, trying to keep pace, actually, with some of these other countries that put so many resources into women's golf that you now see, when you look at any leaderboard on the LPGA, you're going to see, you know, a broad cross-section of players from across the world.
Sure.
And I love
it's
it.
Truly
I love trying to say their name.
Affair.
It is.
I mean, the Japanese have done so well as well. Well, before we get into the leaderboard,
they really are right now the dominant country, the one that's come along alongside the Americans. The Japanese have risen. They've got the leader this week here at the tournament.
Right. Well, before we get into the leaderboard, you know, the AIG Women's Open, it's the fifth and final major on the women's calendar. Why five majors for the women, Grant? I mean, the men have four. So you have the Chevron Championship, the U.S. Women's Open, the Women's PGA Championship, the Evian Championship, and the AIG Women's Open. Why five?
Yeah, great question. And it does seem a bit counterintuitive. We think of the Grand Slam, which is, you know, in bridge or in baseball, you know, that's four. You know, it seems like it ought to be four. The reality is, in women's golf, because it's always been a league that's been scratching and clawing for its piece of the pie, of sports, you know, viewership, they haven't had the luxury, the resources to be able to just dictate, you know, these four are going to be our Grand Slam events in perpetuity. There were years in which the Western Open, the Title Holders Championship were considered majors back in the 50s and 60s. And then there were some years where there were literally two major championships, the LPGA Championship and the U.S. Women's Open. And then along came what we all, a lot of us of our vintage would call the Dinosaur out there in Mission Hills in the desert in California. And that was a major championship that became the Chevron. It moved to Houston, the Women's British Open, which is the AIG Women's Open. It became a major in 2001 in Canada. They've had a great championship for 50 plus years. It was a major for several years. A lot of it comes down to dollars and sponsors. And AIG has been an incredible sponsor. A fifth major was added in 2013. It was somewhat controversial. The Evian Championship, which had been this, it was the highest paying event on the ladies LPGA tour of the non-majors. And they said, we really want to be considered a major championship. Well, the LPGA, they have the authority to be able to designate we're counting this as a major. And at the time, Annie, the other three, U.S. Women's Open was always going to be solid because it was the USGA. But the other three major championships were on very shaky footing. And Mike Kwan, who was a couple of years into his time as commissioner, he wasn't sure, you know, what the future held, and he had the risk of the richest non-major leaving the LPGA Tour if they didn't, you know, if they weren't given major championship status. And there was a reason to give them status. You know, they had committed themselves to the LPGA. So that's why we have five. It's a little cumbersome, but at the end of the day, Evian has produced the best finishes, the best major winners of any of the major championships. And here's how I'll conclude by saying this, Ann. Those of us who've been around a little longer, some say, well, is Evian really a major? Almost everybody who plays the LPGA these days started their careers after it became a major in 2013. So guess what they think? They think of it as a major. That's all they've ever known, is that Evian's a major. So there you go.
Well, now you know the rest of the story.
The rest of it, as Paul Harvey would say.
That's right. Yes. Great explanation. I'm appreciating your educating the audience on that. Okay, very tight leaderboard, 17 players within 6 shots of the lead. And as we mentioned, Mayu Yamashita with a one-shot lead. Although yesterday, she turned, 24? It was her birthday yesterday, but she shot a plus 274.
It was her birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah, she turned your age, 24. and, you know, here's the thing. By the way, I can't even dream that far back. But, you know, Miyu is a rookie on the LPGA Tour. She's from Japan. By the way, the names are one of my favorite parts of the LPGA. In Japan, they would say Miyu Yamashita. That'd be closer to it. But in English, you know, we're more inclined to say Yamashita. That's kind of more intuitive. It's how it looks. So it's like we say A-Lim Kim. Well, she says more Edim Kim. But anyway, we make adjustments here in America. And so Miyu is a rookie. She's, as you said, turned 24. She's second in the Rookie of the Year standing. She's had some great finishes in major championships. She'd never had the lead until going into the round, after any round. Now, granted, she's only played in probably 20 events, 20-plus events, even before she played the LP, before she was a member. So she's very young in her LPGA career, but she's won 13 times on her home tour in Japan. 3 of those were majors on that tour, which we don't count, you know, for women's golf or LPGA, but they mattered to her, I promise you, you know, because that tour called it a major. So she won 3 of those. She's used to playing in high leverage, big events. She made a late run last year to make it to the Olympic Games, and there was a ton of pressure to be one of the 2 representatives of Japan, and she almost medaled. She came very quick, got to the last hole in Paris with a good chance to get a medal. But this is the first time she's been in this position out in front. And here's what's key. And every single player, this is men's golf, women's golf, whatever, every single player would love to have a big lead going into the weekend or going into Sunday. There's not a single player who would not want to be leading by a big margin, 3, 4, 5, 6 sure. shots. But it is so hard. Here's the deal. If let's say Miyu, who leads by 1, as you noted, let's say she shoots 69 or 70 today and loses by 1. No one's going to say she blew it unless she 4-putts the last hole. If you're up 4 or 5 and you lose it, then everyone's going to say, oh, my gosh, they had a 5-shot lead and they lost. It's a weird dynamic. It's like in baseball, you know, when you don't put the closer in until there's a 3-run lead, you know, so they can get the save. There's a weird feeling when you're leading by a larger amount. In one sense, you feel like you've got
pressure.
Some wiggle room, but oh my gosh. And then because you know, only 1 outcome here is acceptable, and that's for me to win. So
that's
what
right.
happened yesterday was
it's
she was up 5.
Like a Cameron Young's situation at the Women's Championship.
Very much
he has a 5-shot lead, and he hasn't won yet on the PGA Tour.
And I'm telling you, rarely is the case when the player who's in that position just cruises, where they never give up that big lead. More than likely, that lead of his will at least be threatened. He may go on to win, and I'm pulling for him, the Sleepy Hollow kid from up there.
That's right.
But let me just say this real quickly. Yesterday, there were Miyu, who led by 3. There was only 1 player within 6 of her going into yesterday's round. Now, as you noted, there are 16 players who are within 6 shots of her. And let me tell you something. If you're someone who loves to get up early and watch a British Open, with wind and rain and elements. Do it now. It's on USA Network. It's going to switch over to NBC at noon Eastern time, but it's already on USA Network, and it is howling right now. The average score is 77. It's nasty, and all that means is I think this thing is wide open. You've got Andrea Lee from L.A.
Especially with those
she's
elements.
From Southern California. I mean, literally 4 or 5 under par could win, and Miyu is 9 under at the moment. But it's going to be a battle of the golf course, but also yourself, your mind, the elements.
Anything.
I think
happen.
We're in for something wild today. Yeah.
Grant, let's talk Lodi Woad on July 6th. Lodi.
Unbelievable.
Lodi. She was an amateur on July 6th. She won the Women's Irish Open at Carn House by 6 shots. A week later, July 13th, she finishes third at the Evian Championship. And that's where she earned her LPGA Tour card, right? And then she turns professional and wins her very first pro tournament, the Scottish Women's Open. I thought for sure she'd be, you know, way up there on the leaderboard this week. But, there's
all. Yeah, she's
at minus three right now, yeah. She
I'm not putting it past her. She's 6 shots back with this nasty weather.
Oh, yeah.
Not putting it past her. Lottie went to Florida State collegiately. She was a good junior player in England coming up, but she really blossomed at Florida State under Amy Bond, the head coach there. She won the Augusta National Women's Amateur and didn't just win it, Annie, but she birdied 17 and 18 to come from one back
there.
To walk off.
I remember that. Three birdies in her final 4 holes.
When you win at Augusta National, but to do it like that, a walk-off like Rory did this year, special. And then this year, she'd had a good year, but she had the lead going into the final round there at Augusta National, trying to go back-to-back, struggled a bit, really missed a bunch of putts that you kind of thought, what happened? Lottie's supposed to win. Well, then she has a decent NCAA championship, but top 10, but didn't win. And then all of a sudden she goes and plays, gets a sponsor invite to play the Women's Irish Open, which was a ladies European tour event, not an LPGA, but a ladies European tour event. She wins it, doesn't just win it. She wins by 6, blows the field away. And that field, by the way, included Charlie Hull, who's contending this week, Madeline Sackstrom, who went to LSU from Sweden. So it had a bunch of LPGA players in it, and she blew the field away. Then she goes to the major at Evian. She leads on Sunday on the back 9 and finishes 1 shot out of a playoff as an amateur. Well, the LPGA just started this new system where if you accrue enough points, it's a little bit like the PGA Tour's university ranking, where if you that's college-based. This is more just amateur-based. If you accrue enough points by doing things like being number 1 in the world in the amateur ranks, if you win the Augusta National event, if you do some other things, you can accrue enough points and earn your LPGA card. So that third place finish got her LPGA card. That got her into the Scottish Open, which is an LPGA event, and she won that one, as you said. So
what a star!
She is as great as Nelly Korda is, the biggest name in women's golf, at least for the month of July. We got to say. There's really no one else, Annie, who's now Rose Zhang a couple of years ago, you might remember there at Liberty
absolutely.
National. Remember, she turned pro and she won her first event. I was doing that event and we were scouring the record books because we couldn't find another player for 70 years who had ever won their very first pro start. You just don't do that in golf, men's or women.
In New Jersey.
I still can't. Correct.
Yep.
Liberty National.
That's
and
right.
And I still don't think we can find a man who's won his professional debut, not as an amateur, but you turn pro and then you win your first start. It just doesn't happen. Lottie's done it, and now she's 24th in the world, and I'm telling you, I'm not counting her out today. I'm not counting her out yet. 6 back and in terrible weather.
Wouldn't that be incredible? What a comeback. Okay, quickly, because we only have like a minute or 2 left. Nelly Korda has been number 1 for 71 straight weeks. That could change, right? She could lose her top ranking.
She could. Yeah, Nelly at the moment is 2 over par, and Gino Titikun of Thailand, who's just 23 years old, 22 years old, is about 3 shots ahead of her. So Gino, who's just a percentage points behind Nelly, could become number 1. Nelly's had a good year. Her scoring average is lower than it was last year when she won seven times, but she just has not played as well on the weekend as she has needed to, and it just hasn't all come together. I'm not counting out Nelly winning once or twice or more this year, but it just hasn't come together like it did last year, and a lot of that's just how she's played on the weekend. So, yeah, Nelly, who's been number one for 108 weeks and for 60 straight weeks, could well lose that ranking. And I think the bigger thing for her is it's less the number one ranking. She just wants to win again, and it's not going to happen this week. And you know, we'll see her again coming up back in the States. Portland, Canada, and Boston are the next three events on the LPGA schedule.
I mean, last year, five straight wins, seven wins overall. She's winless this season, but she has made the cut in all 12 tournaments she has played, which is not easy to do with all that depth out there, as you know, Grant Boone. Quickly, last question. The new LPGA commissioner, Craig Kesler. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, love him. He is the Energizer Bunny. He started July 15th, and technically, officially, he'd already been working behind the scenes for 6 weeks. He comes from the PGA of America. Before that, he was with Top Golf. He's got tons of connections within the golf world, and that's what the LPGA needs. The LPGA doesn't need sympathy. What they need are people who can share their vision for how great this tour is and understand how great these players are. And you need people like AIG, Peter Zaffino, the American magnate who's really built AIG into a global superpower, and they've latched on to the Women's Open and taken it to new heights. They tripled the purse size since 2019 when they took over. That's who Craig Kesler needs. We've got to get more events in the New York's metropolitan area. We've got the one there at the Mizuho. There are too many great courses up there. We got to get back there for more. The product is there. His job is to parlay that into more people realizing how great it is.
To be continued, Grant Boone. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for getting up early for us.
A delight. Thanks, Annie.
Thanks so much. All right, coming up, we're going to shift gears from the LPGA to the PGA Tour and talk with the coach of breakout star Chris Gotterup. Jason Birnbaum is the director of golf for Manhattan Woods in West Nyack, New York, a Golf Magazine Top 100 teacher, and Golf Digest Best in State teacher in New York. But first, let me tell you that IBKUL, Ivy Cool Luxury Athleisure Wear for both men and women, offers the highest performance-driven apparel to look and feel your best. Use promo code AND20 for 20% off regularly priced items at www.ibkul.com.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Hey, welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori, and I'm delighted to say hello to Jason Birnbaum, Director of Instruction at Manhattan Woods Golf Club in West Nyack, New York. He's been working with PGA Tour star Chris Gotterup since Chris was 14 years old, and Chris has had amazing results in the last couple months, most notably winning the Genesis Scottish Open on Sunday, July 13th, and then a week later finishing in solo third place at the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. Jason, welcome to Talking Golf.
Good morning, Ann. Thank you for having me.
Hey, congrats on all of Chris's success. I'm sure you work with a ton of different people, but let's start from the beginning. Tell us how you first connected with Chris and what has your working relationship been like through the years?
Sure. Yeah, it was great. Chris's dad, Morton, found me quite a while ago. Chris was probably around 14, and they signed up for a lesson. I didn't know who Chris was or know much about him, and he was just another person on the schedule that day. I was teaching at Alpine Country Club back then, and it was actually in the winter time, which was interesting because I was teaching indoors on a golf simulator, and this kid walks in and starts ripping shots into the simulator, and obviously it's simulation, so you can't really, get an accurate depiction of what's happening, but the technology back then was decent enough to, I could see this kid had a lot of speed and lots of power, and, he was really a raw talent, and he was bombing it, so I was kind of excited to see where that could go, and it led to 14 years later, a Scottish Open win, so it was pretty cool. But when we first started, it's interesting, it was actually a blessing getting to work with him indoors to start, because when you're indoors, you really just can't focus on much other than the golf swing, right? There's no short game. You can't see the ball flight. You're not playing a golf course. So it really gave us an opportunity to just get into sort of the nuts and bolts of the swing and not worry too much about where the ball was going. And being able to get off to a start like that with a talented player for the first few months was really pretty cool. And actually, to be honest with you, I've done that with some students over the years where I've actually started with them indoors because it's just, you know, seeing my experience with Chris and how much more productive it was to start in that environment gave me that idea. But yeah, it's been great to watch, you know, how good he's gotten over the years. But starting indoors like that back then was pretty cool.
That must have been such a cool experience. In the middle of winter, you're saying, and here comes this kid who's just bombing the ball. Did he have any fundamentals at that point?
Yeah, I mean, he was just kind of all over the place. He would shoot, you know, good scores in the low 70s, and he would shoot scores, you know, in the high 80s. So there was a big range. He probably at that point wasn't, you know, 100% dedicated and focused on golf. He was playing lacrosse at that time, which I think really helped him from a speed and power standpoint when it comes to golf. And, yeah, I mean, you know, things like the driver, for example, like you could see how much speed and power there was, but, you know, it was hard for him to control the driver. And then, you know, finesse parts of the game, like chipping and wedge play were areas that needed, you know, a lot of attention. So we got into it. We started working on really all areas, and we had that couple month head start until we, you know, got outside that spring and, you know, I was actually able to see his ball flight. But yeah, it was pretty fascinating.
That is so fascinating for sure. And I know people in golf know of Chris, and particularly in New Jersey. His father won several New Jersey State Golf Association tournaments, right?
That's correct. Yep. He's a great player. Yep.
So, I mean, I read where Chris played varsity golf at Christian Brothers Academy and then at Rutgers from 2017 to 2021. Then he transferred to University of Oklahoma. And obviously, when he transferred, you guys stayed connected, right?
Correct. Yeah, we did. So, you know, he wasn't, you know, he didn't have an amazing junior golf career. So there weren't a ton of colleges that were really interested, and Rutgers was. Coach Schutte there did a great job recruiting him, and putting him in that sort of team environment at Rutgers was really big for him. You know, being on having a little bit more structure to his schedule, getting into the gym, playing great golf courses that we have here in the Northeast. And he really started to become a more well-rounded player. Chris has talked quite a bit about the amount of weight that he lost his sophomore year. Chris lost like probably 40 pounds around his sophomore year of college. And that really sort of just catapulted him. He started to swing the club better. He started to play at another level sort of that summer of sophomore year. He dominated, you know, golf in the Met area in that summer of sophomore year, and he really sort of took off. And his next couple of years at Rutgers were outstanding. And then, you know, he got a lucky break with the COVID year, so he got an extra year of eligibility, and he transferred to Oklahoma, and that took him to just another whole new level. Oklahoma was number one team in the country, and Coach Hibble has an amazing program there, and you know, it's very windy in Oklahoma. The ground is firm. It's a different level of competition. So he, you know, learning to play in the wind there, that was actually, you know, really big for him. And he just became, you know, he took his ball striking really to another level. Chris actually commented after he won the Scottish that it was, you know, it was kind of like playing golf in Oklahoma, just with the way the wind was and the ground and how he had to shape shots and things like that. But yeah, we kept in touch. Obviously, when he was at Rutgers, you know, I saw him quite a bit because he was in New Jersey. And Oklahoma, I made a trip out to Oklahoma once or twice to see him, and he came home enough over the holidays, and you know, we would do virtual lessons throughout that time. And Chris is, he's always been sort of a, what's the right word? You know, he's not very needy in terms of when it comes to, you know, needing help all the time. So when Chris is in a groove and he's got things going, I mean, he can really, you know, he's not high maintenance when it comes to needing a lot of work. So, you know, there would be times where we didn't talk for a couple weeks and, you know, he'd shoot me a text and says, it feels great. You know, this is what I got going. He sent me a video. I say, it looks great. You know, love the thought, you know, and then you may not hear from him for a couple weeks. So that's kind of how it was back in college, and he was the number one player in the country on the number one team in the country, and that gave him a lot of confidence coming out of school.
And I love the fact that he learned how to play in the wind in Oklahoma. That is just so crucial.
Yeah, that was big.
And obviously helped him in Scotland and in Northern Ireland. And he won, by the way, two of the biggest awards that a college golfer can win when he was at Oklahoma, the Haskins Award and the Jack Nicklaus Award. So people in golf were really seeing him emerge. And so tell me, what was going through your mind when you saw Chris win the Scottish? Not only win it, but outplaying Rory McIlroy head-to-head in the final round.
Cool. Yeah, amazing. I mean, that was just the best of the best. I mean, he just doesn't get better than that. It was, you know, to do it over there and to do it in those conditions, it was just such a, like a beautiful weekend out there, and to do it against, you know, one of the best players in the world and sort of a hometown hero in Rory was special. You know, I knew, you know, we're both of us. I mean, everyone on his team, Chris has got a great team around him, and everyone, you know, sort of knows what he's capable of. And, you know, until he does it, you know, obviously there's always going to be a little doubt in people's minds. But I thought he'd play well that day. You know, a lot of people were asking me on Saturday night before the Scottish final round, you know, can Chris handle this pairing? How's he going to deal with this pressure? And that never really crossed my mind that he would have a difficult time handling the pressure. He's got a bit of a fearless to him that has, you know, served him well. And I didn't think that would get to him. He'd played in big moments like that before. He had already won on tour, and, you know, he finished, you know, fourth place at the John Deere when he had, you know, really just gotten out of college, which was a big deal, winning those top awards. So, yeah, I thought he was prepared for it, and I wasn't really surprised, to be honest. I thought he could do it, and I was happy to see him get it done.
So what do you think is the biggest difference in Chris's game in, say, the last couple months?
Yeah, I would say just overall consistency. All areas of his game have gotten a little bit better. I would say the driver, though, is number one. You know, Chris has lots of club head speed. He hits the ball really far. He's one of the longest hitters really in the world. And when he's driving
it, now off the tee?
His club speed average is probably around 127 miles an hour. And Chris is flying at about 330 on a normal one. And, you know, when it's firm and fast conditions on tour, you know, 330, 335 in the air is going to go, it's going to be go over 350. It's going to go 350,
crazy.
360, which is a lot. So when he's hitting the fairway, you know, he's going to have lots of wedges in his hands, and over an 18-hole period, he's going to be tough to beat. And when he's not hitting the fairway, he's hitting it so far that he's just much closer to the green, and he's a strong kid. So, you know, playing from the rough is not something that he's afraid to do. But I would say over the last few months, he's driven the ball really well. He had struggled with the driver late last year and early this year. But the driver has gotten much, much more consistent. And his short game has also been at another level. These last couple weeks, especially the events he played in Scotland and Northern Ireland, his chipping and putting were great. He had really putted pretty solid most of the year, but just not making enough. And they've just, these last couple weeks, they've really just, the putts have started to drop, and that's what it's all about. And now he's got lots of confidence, and confidence in golf is a dangerous thing for guys at that level.
Sure. I mean, do you think he thinks he's caught lightning in a bottle, or do you think this is going to be somewhat the norm for Chris Gutterup?
No. I think that this would be somewhat the norm. I mean, he's really been trending. He's had lots of consistency, really, the last 3 months. He's finished between 12th and 28th place in almost every event he's played, and he's made something like 11 out of 12 of the last cuts, and the one cut he missed up in Canada was just by one shot. So he's really just been trending in the right direction for a while now. This is not, you know, just been a 2 week thing. The only difference is he's putted well these last 2 weeks, and, you know, putting is not something that's easy to always be, you know, they're not always going to fall for you, but I would not call this lightning in a bottle. I think Chris has shown that he's been much more consistent, and he also has the game and the power to keep this going.
So he's currently number 20 in the Ryder Cup rankings, which is higher than Jordan Spieth, higher than Billy Horschel, higher than Max Grazerman, Ryan Gerard, Jake Knapp, Max Homa, Ricky Fowler. What have you talked to him about that? What are his thoughts about that?
You know, we haven't really. I think it's only kind of been on his radar more of late. I've mentioned even after winning in Scotland, I don't think that really was on his mind. After he played well at Port Rush, I think, you know, obviously that started to be a hot topic of conversation, and you know, Chris is, you know, certainly hears it. So it's on his mind now, and let's see. I mean, he knows he's got work to do. you know, everyone's saying if it was tomorrow, he would be on the team, but it's not tomorrow. So we've got to, it's like, you know, he's got certain goals. I think for right now, he really wants to get to the Tour Championship. He's a lock for these next two playoff events. And, you know, he's pretty close to getting into the Tour Championship. So first and foremost, we want to get to that last week of the year and give himself a good chance at the final. But yeah, he's right in the mix, and I think he's up for it. He's been up to the challenge quite a bit this year. So let's see if he can get it done. I think he's got to play consistent golf here in the playoffs, and I think that he will.
Well, I mean, somewhat overnight to maybe the general golf public, he has become a big star because of his play at the Scottish and the Open. I mean, you've known his abilities for years now, but how is he dealing with this increase in attention and, you know, all the distractions that come with, you know, winning like that?
Yeah, he's been great. I was with Chris in Minnesota the week after the Open Championship, and it was definitely, that's probably the maybe 12th or 13th event that I've been to with Chris this year. And you could tell the difference in Minnesota. I mean, there's a little bit of a different level of respect from the other players. There is, you know, more players coming over to say hello to him and congratulate him and talk to him. And the reaction from the fans was totally different in Minnesota, the autograph requests, the interview requests. And I'll tell you, he hasn't skipped a beat. I mean, he has been just this usual Chris got her up. He hasn't changed a thing. His demeanor out there was fantastic. The way that he's handled the whole situation has been great. And, you know, he's kind of a low key guy, and he's been really good. He hasn't changed much. He's got a really, really good team around him. And I think, you know, the support there has definitely been helpful. And yeah, he's just kind of enjoying the moment right now and the opportunities that he's got in front of him really these next couple months.
Real quick, last question. Wyndham Championship, Cameron Young, another Met area professional. He'll take that five-shot lead into the final round today, Jason. He's been a runner-up 7 times. No wins to date on the PGA Tour yet. What would you say to Cameron?
Yeah, I mean, just keep doing what you're doing, right? I've seen Cameron out there almost every week I've gone out. And kid's working hard. You know, his dad's been with him every step of the way, and they're always grinding on the range. And you know, he's right there. So, you know, don't change a thing, and, you know, be confident and keep doing what you're doing, because he's certainly been in command this week. He's a great player. I mean, he's one of the best players in the world, especially when he's on his game. And like we've talked about with Chris, there's so much confidence involved. These guys are all, you know, all great players to get to that level. And it's just a matter of, you know, feeling good and being in the right frame of mind and seeing some putts go in. And that's what he's done this week. And I think he'll play really solid today.
Jason, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for your insight and continued success.
You got it. Thanks for having me on, Ann. I appreciate it. Have a great, great day.
Thanks so much. My thanks to Jason Birnbaum, to Grant Boom, to Rami Levy in the studio. Talking Golf with Ann LaGore was brought to you by IB Cool Luxury Athleisure Apparel for Men and Women, featuring the exclusive Icefill Cooling Technology along with UPF 50+ Sun Protection. Visit ibko.com. To learn more. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks so much for listening, and I look forward to talking with you next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Ann LaGore.